here in a couple seconds. We'll get to Mr. Henry Winkler. I'm just telling Nick, I'm like, there's so much in this book. There really is. Like the where his family came from, escaping Nazi Germany, his mother and father, who were good providers financially, but emotionally they were terrible to him. They just were terrible to him. And you know, I think it's just some people say it's a different time, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I also don't think that we knew that when, you know, in some people's minds, if you're hard on a kid and you drive them hard, then that makes a hard young man and he becomes successful because they know how to face the world.
Right.
So that's the theory, right? But what we don't know is the crushing pain that it gives when your father and your mother are terrible to you.
And that
words last forever when it's somebody you love so much and want their approval so badly.
Mm-hmm.
And just how he pushed through all that and dyslexia and the cover-ups. And then there's some great funny stuff in this book. Like, well, we're going to jump into all of it. Remember to ask him about Lula from Alabama.
Okay.
But this book is great. And it's great in about a million different ways. It's great if you're a fan of Henry Winkler and the Fonz, and that's where you joined on, or if you just joined in at Waterboy or Barry.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Just a walk through a life that it's hard to imagine every twist and turn, and it's all very human. The book is not all, this is how great it is to be a celebrity. It's everything. It's from growing up to inauspicious beginnings, even though on the outside they looked great to many people. I'm sure he grew up, there was money in his family.
Yeah.
He had an opportunity, but it was just, but then the severity of his mother and father is just, it's soul crushing. It's funny because we all find parallels, right? Mm-hmm. In lives. In moments, in books, in the way we feel about it. You go, I remember that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that moment. I remember crossing that line in life.
And facing that.
Yeah, it's a great book. Being Henry, The Fonz and Beyond.
Born October 30th in Manhattan, New York, our next guest is one of the most beloved people we have ever had on the show. From his iconic work on the series Happy Days, to movies such as Night Shift and The Waterboy, his Emmy Award-winning work on the HBO series Barry, and his starring role in the holiday classic An American Christmas Carol, as well as his career as an award-winning children's book author. And now you can read his story in his new memoir, Being Henry, The Fonz and Beyond. Please welcome Hollywood icon and longtime friend of the show, Henry Winkler.
Mr. Henry Winkler, how are you?
Unbelievable. What an introduction.
Oh, listen, by the way, how is everything? How is Stacy? How's your family? How is Hanukkah?
At this second, everybody is great.
Beautiful. Beautiful, man. You guys had a good time together? You spent time during Hanukkah?
Not yet. No, yeah. That's why it's all good.
So, because Zoe, your daughter, she's in Los Angeles, right? Is Max there as well?
Yes, they all live about 10 minutes from us. All our six grandchildren. Max is in New York running a show for Ryan Murphy, who is a very prolific producer.
Excellent.
He's doing American Horror Stories.
Oh, which is
huge.
I love that.
And he just hired me. I am working for my son.
This is going to be something.
I'm telling you, it is so exciting.
Well, we really have so much to talk about. By the way, congratulations on the book. It's everything I thought
Thank
it would be.
You.
It really is. It's very honest. I mean, there's a lot in this book.
Yeah. People, I will say, you know, I'm going to brag now for a minute. This Sunday, it will be in the top 20 of the New York Times bestseller list for the seventh week in a row.
Beautiful. Congratulations.
And that is amazing. Whatever you think of the New York Times, that book list is still the pinnacle.
Yes. It's the gold standard.
Yeah.
And for someone with the unfortunate title of Dummerhund as a child,
yeah,
you wrote, you're on the New York Times bestseller list, Henry.
It's unbelievable.
It is.
And, you know, being as learning challenged, we've talked about that for many years, you and I. You know, it was daunting. It was Max, my son who has now hired me. He was the one who said, Dad, Ted, you got to write these stories. You got too many stories.
Right.
You got to. I just feel it's going to be good. And I said, I can't do that. It's too big. I don't even know where to start.
And I thought you started beautifully. The audition in 1973, you walk in, and like the honest truth is, we all want to say we walked in, know we're going to nail it, right? But you walked in and saw it, and you're like, oh, what's going to happen here?
But that has been every audition since I auditioned for Barry. I sat in those chairs waiting for Bill Hader to show up so I could audition for him first. I mean, you know, you as an actor, you never finish auditioning.
Right, right. And that's what people don't know, that you do something huge that everybody's heard of, and we all think, oh, that's, well, then you're made. You're made. The life,
yeah, because
everybody,
you know,
will
why?
Want you. Right.
The executives have a lifespan of a rock and roll star, like 19 months. You know, it's like a revolving door. And they are so scared. They want to see, can you walk and talk? You know, he's kind of mature. Let's see if he still has a brain.
Yeah, it never ends. But so let me
never
go,
ends.
Let me go to this first story. You walk in, but something comes over you. You're not by nature the Fonz. That is not your first, like how you walk down the street. That's just not who you are. And but somehow, some way. You threw it to the wind. You went, well, this is either going to get real weird or real good.
But that is the way that I finally figured out in writing this book, as I look back at my career, that is the way you have to live. You have to be a bendable buddy. You have to go with your imagination.
That's a great term.
You know, come hell or high water, you've got to go with your instinct.
Yeah.
No matter how frightened you are.
And it's a balance between wanting to do your best, but having to throw your given F out the window.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. It's hard to explain.
And it works
somebody.
It doesn't work every time, but it works most of the time.
And you,
that is the stunning thing is, the more authentic you are in presenting yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
The more dynamic you present yourself.
I couldn't agree more. You know, that was
a big lesson.
Yeah. Well, and for me, for this radio thing, I just wasn't good enough to pretend at anything and to try to be something I wasn't. So I didn't have a choice but to be authentic. And I quickly saw the more we were real, then the more people just kind of went, oh, yeah, that's how I am too. And it, for whatever reason, it's worked out. But
yeah,
yes.
So, and how long have you been on the radio?
I've only had this one job for 30 years.
30 years? My God, you've been talking for 30 years nonstop.
I know you'd think I'd be better.
Wow. It's amazing. Let me just tell you, the last time we saw each other was at a Comic-Con.
Yes, sir.
And you thought, oh, my friend is standing all day on the concrete saying hello to his fans. You went to some hardware store and came back with rubber mats for me to stand on during that Comic-Con.
Yes, sir.
I mean, finally, you did something for me. It was amazing.
I knew it.
No. I just want to say I am so appreciative of that one detail.
Oh, I love you, and I value your friendship,
Yeah, me too. I do too.
And I'll tell you, after this book, like, I go through this, and I just think about your childhood and not being able to read. And being able to read, but not being able to not the way we know it. And stealing your time, like your parents would be mad at you. And you grew up pretty affluent, but none of it matters, you realize.
Yeah, but you know what? See, this is the thing. We thought we were affluent, but we were living above our means. I walked into the living room, and my father was on the phone with his friend, crying. And, you know, I had to learn. I could understand German. I couldn't really speak it. I couldn't read it for sure. I had trouble with English. But I could understand a little of it, and he was begging his friend to borrow even more money. And his friend was saying, I'm so sorry. I cannot lend you more money. I don't have it. And he was begging him. So I what was underneath the veneer was dark.
Right.
You know, for my bar mitzvah, I got, I think, in bonds and cash, I had $400. And I've had it in the bank. And when I was about 15, my father needed to borrow my bar mitzvah money. And I said, okay, when will you pay me back? Because that's, you know, all the money I have, and I'm going to save it for something, you know, when I'm older.
Sure.
And he said, I do not need to pay you back. I am your father. I've done so much for you. I take some money. And I thought, oh, okay, that's really,
yeah,
that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny because I was saying just before you came on, there's parallels. And I remember, because this theme goes through your book, I remember being a kid, much like when you heard that, I would hear my parents talk, and I always was afraid they were taking our house away. Or when I got older, my mom paid the bills and didn't want my father to know. So I would be the guy, and we'd play this game in the family that everybody pretends they don't know what's happening. The phone would ring during dinner. I would walk into their bedroom and answer it, and it would be GMAC Mortgage. And I would tell them my parents weren't home. And I know my dad was pretending he didn't know. My mom was pretending. And it was just this never-ending game that manifests itself. I can't. I don't carry credit card debt. My house is paid off.
I am with you. I am so idiosyncratic about money.
Yes.
Holy mackerel. I am crazy about money.
Because I'm always afraid they're going to take it away.
You. But isn't that funny? Here you are. Exactly what town did you grow up in?
Well, I moved to Kansas City when I was 11. Before that,
all right.
Hayes,
but,
Kansas.
But the phone call came in Kansas City, in the house in Kansas. Okay,
Olathe.
So you're in Kansas City.
Yep.
I'm in New York City. I'm 78. You are, what, 22?
Yes, I'm 55.
55? No kidding. I didn't think you were that old. Okay, so so there you are. You're 50. You're 55. I'm 78. And in a way, we could swap houses.
Yep.
Because we're all the same.
Yes.
And if it's happening to you, and it's happening to me, and it's happening to you where you are, and it's happening to me where I was, there's millions of people who are living just on the edge.
Always.
And living some sort of fantasy about getting by.
Yeah. No, we're two paychecks away from homeless.
Two paychecks away, yeah.
And then as I read through this book, and then there's some really, it makes me laugh because I'm thinking about what you're writing and knowing you over the years, it really lends a lot more weight to read it. And then I get to Lula from Alabama.
Lula Turlington Blackwell III. Now, when I auditioned for a drama festival, I was at Emerson in Boston, and this is at Yale University in New Haven. And I am somehow, we are at a party of students from all over the country, all actors, and there is this vision walking from one piece of furniture to the other. Her feet never touch the rug. And, you know, whatever that concept is, thunderstruck, smitten beyond all recognition, I couldn't breathe.
Right.
And I talk to her, and I get to know her, and I write her 100 letters. And then I go to visit her in Birmingham, Alabama,
which is a very long way from New York.
In so many ways. I'm an actor, I'm a northerner, I'm a Jew, and I come to her house, and the Turlingtons are as they sound.
Right.
Mr. and Mrs. Turlington are the way that sounds. And they go upstairs, and Lula wants to make love under the dining room table. And the Turlingtons are right upstairs. I literally, it was as if someone dipped parts of me in ice water. Oh, my God. It was so dangerous. Oh. I didn't know what to do.
That's so great. It's so great. Just there's so many great moments in this book. To getting Lords of Flatbush, and it's.
Well, there again, you know what I learned? My professional life and my life had nothing to do with each other. I could do in my professional life what I wouldn't dare do in my real life.
Yes.
And I was released in some way, and it worked.
Yeah, because you could be somebody else, right? Like that's your power, to be an actor, to be a musician, or be somebody else. Like, if you have this fear about who you are inside, but you can change that person and become that character, become the Fonz, which is certainly why you played it so beautifully and perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm telling you, I look back right now, having to write it down, I look back, and all I wanted from Being Henry, the memoir, was somebody's going to laugh, and maybe one thing that I learned that I wrote in the book will touch somebody, and they go, "Yeah, I can use that. That's good. That is a good lesson. I can use that." That's all I wanted.
Well, you've accomplished it many times over in this book. The book that you sent me that I treasure, because you it was a beautiful inscription. Normally, I dog ear pages in a book when I read it, but I can't bring myself to it. So I have, there's 200 yellow post-it notes sticking out of this thing that I'm going to painstakingly remove before I put this in my library of things that I really love. And
wow, thank you.
No, it's great. And then the crazy thing. So all of this, and then you go to L.A., you have to crash with friends, you don't have a car.
On Stephanie Axelrod's floor.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you saw some things.
Well, I opened the door, and I was going to go and get something to drink. And I thought, you know what, maybe I'm just going to be thirsty for the rest of the night. I opened that door, and they were doing things. Oh, made me blush.
But it pays off. Within a month and a half, you got the call to go audition for Happy Days. And then, I mean, obviously that everything after that is there's a lot of history. But, I mean, this is the part I had to read three times. When they said they really like you, I don't think I want to do a series, I believe was the...
That's what I said to my agent when she said, "Go to Paramount and audition for this new show." And I said, "You know, I don't really know if I want to do a series," because I was still I was still under the guilt of the Yale Drama School.
Right, right.
You know, we're trained for the theater. And she said, oh, will you just go and meet the people? And I walked in, and this was the second week I was in L.A.
That's crazy.
And the third and a half week that I was in L.A., they called me and said, would you like to play this role?
That's crazy. It's crazy. That's a movie.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And
it was truly amazing.
And here's a little side note. So I read that everybody really, Gary Marshall loves you. Everybody loves you. One guy's not that sure. And he is a bigwig named Barry Diller.
Barry Diller and Michael Eisner were major executives at the time, and they were running ABC. So they had to come over and see the casting. So they plucked my unibrow. They combed my hair into a ducktail. They put me in a T-shirt, and of course I had to wear the cloth jacket because I couldn't
right.
wear leather.
The original, yeah.
And then I had to audition for them.
They were not crazy, but Gary, he stuck up for you. And the reason I bring this is because I didn't know Barry Diller's part of that. I only know him, a dear friend of mine worked for Barry in New York and very closely doing the Little Island that they just opened on the Hudson River. And she was treated so beautifully by that man. He treated her with such love and respect and took care of her through her pregnancy, through Start and Stop the Project. I mean, that's the only reason I recognize the name.
Yeah. No, he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
One of the most famous executives through the history of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. Then he left the business and became an entrepreneur.
It's crazy. All these moments in time that could have gone left or right, just the road could have changed, and it changes the trajectory of course, absolutely everything. The fact that that show, Happy Days, was written with Ron Howard in mind as the star. Richie Cunningham, he was well-known. He was a child star. Everybody loved him from Mayberry. But instantly, almost right out of the gate, by the second season, they knew you were the reason.
And, you know, what was important was that, and this is really true, you're treated like so differently when you are a star by the public and by the executives. And I understood right away that I could not buy into that. That I was walking on cotton balls, and that was what was supporting me in my stardom. And one day it would rain, and those cotton balls would become soaking wet, and I would fall through the cracks.
Right.
So I had to, because I was part of an ensemble. I learned in drama school that you do it all together. There is no star. So it never dawned on me. Yes, it was great that my character took off, but I lived with the Cunninghams. I did so well because I was with these people.
Right. You're strong as your team. You're strong as everybody around you.
Yeah, truly.
And you and Ron, and that's because it was definitely tough on Ron, you know, because he was, again, they
treat
you differently.
Well, it hurt his feelings.
Sure, but not you. You didn't hurt his feelings, but the situation did.
The situation hurt his feelings. And we were driving home of, I maybe in the fourth year, and, you know, he had a little VW bug that was like driving home in a matchbox. And I was squozed in the seat. And I said, Ron, we got to talk about this. And he said, yeah, it bothered me, but you're not doing anything to make the balance different. You're just being a good actor. So it's good for the show. So I understand that. And it is exciting to watch the show soar through the ratings. I mean, it was really like a Hollywood dream.
Sure. I mean, it's bigger than big.
Yeah, and he's still my relative, you know. It's he's like my brother.
Yeah, and the side note, I remember Jimmy Walker telling us about Freddie Prinze was so jealous of John Travolta, he wanted to kill him. Got a bow and arrow and shot one into his front door because the magazines one day were Freddie Prinze, and then the next month they were all John Travolta, and it probably contributed sadly to him committing suicide.
Yeah, that was very sad that Freddie died so soon.
Sure.
His son is a good acquaintance because now he's got children on my Freddie Prinze Jr. Is the most lovely guy.
Yes.
And he has children the same age as my grandchildren, and they play against each other in soccer.
Nice.
So how the world turns.
Yeah. So to exactly what Henry's talking about, guys, the season, you know, gets so big, they start bringing them out to like Neiman Marcus and Dallas. So they'll send four of you out, of course, Ralph Malph and Potsy and you.
Right. During the weekends, they would send us sometimes twos, sometimes fours. Ralph, Donnie Most, Anson Williams, Ron, and I would split up and travel together promoting the show. But in Dallas, at the flagship of Neiman Marcus, the flagship store, we all went together. And there were 25,000 people between us and our limousine. And Donnie Most said, "Oh, my God, how are we going to get there?" He did, "I don't do well in crowds. Oh, what happens if they start moving toward us? What happens if they rip off our clothes?" I said, "Donnie, I will take care of this." Now, where I got the nerve, I don't know. But I just turned around and for the first time used the Fonz off the show. I was so petrified of being typecast. I never was Fonz-like out of character off the show. I turned around and I said, "All right, listen up. You're going to part like the Red Sea." And I'm telling you, there was like, this crowd just parted and made an avenue for us. I said, "All right, you're not going to touch us." And we just walked down that avenue, got into the car, and sped away. Crazy.
Before you got in that car, a little kid called you short.
Well, can I say that on radio?
Well, you could use just the first initial.
Okay. So I'm walking with the and somebody yells out, "Hey, he's so short." And I turned around and I went, "Hey, F you, I am not short." And another kid went, "He is so cool." You got that right. And we just kept walking. And it was truly, you forget all these little details. And there are so many details like that.
Yes. That's what makes the book so good. It just, so good, man. It is.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I mean, even when you were a little kid, it kind of goes back and forth. Like, BSing your way into the Honeymooners.
Oh, my God. My sister was going to go and see Jackie Gleason. She's going to see it shot live. And I begged. I was like 11, and I begged to go with her. And when we got to the door, the doorman, he said, "Where's your ticket?" And I never acted so well in my life. "Where's my ticket? I lost my ticket. It's in the cab. Oh, the cab is gone. Can you... anybody see the cab? No, the cab is on 8th Avenue. Sir, I don't know what to do. I'll just stand here by..." "Okay, go in."
That's so good.
Thank you.
So good.
Thank you.
Born to do
Never
this.
Never had a ticket.
The walk through this life to me. And because, by the way, I'm only at page talking about this 63. The book, I can't recommend it enough because it is about a celebrity. It's about an actor. It's about someone we all know, but it's about life. It's about a tough childhood. It's about everything from, listen, it's tough to write about the truth about even our parents, right? Like,
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I knew how to work with a partner in the children's books that I did. Detective Duck. Detective Duck came out 14 days before the memoir. And, you know, it's for emerging readers. So I knew how to do that. But here I had to meet this man who is now going to help me construct this memoir. And I spoke to him for about 70 hours. And then he said, you know, I'm going to interview Stacy, too. And now she's in the book.
Yes.
Then I read it on Audible, which is the most difficult job I've ever done in my life.
I'm so glad you did it, though, because some will have others, and it has to be in your voice.
Oh, my gosh. So I'm reading it, and then they said, hey, do you think Stacy would want to do her parts instead of hiring an actress? I asked Stacy. She walked into the booth, never had done it before. Boom. First time.
Of course. Of course. And let's talk about that. You're a big deal. You know, Happy Days is just on fire. You are good looking. You're on Rodeo Drive. You're out shopping. You got some money in your pocket. You're at Jerry Magnin shop. And you notice this, she's working in retail.
Yes. Now, I didn't know this. I just thought she was a customer. She was the publicist for the store.
Right.
And I asked her, you know, I said, oh, I can't decide between these two jackets. Which one? And I should have known there was trouble right then and there. She said both. I am too practical to buy two jackets when I just need one. So I bought a blue velvet with red piping, sport coat, had it fitted, came back the next week, and she's there again. She said she was working. I say she was there. She knew I was returning.
Mm.
Yeah.
But she...
I asked her for a soda, and I had just bought my first house. And a friend of mine, Carol, who was in my drama class at Yale, her husband, they were hippies on a commune somewhere in Seattle, in the woods. I can't even imagine living in the woods. And her husband was an architect. He came down. He did my house. He fixed it up. It was phenomenal, beautiful wood detail. I had no one to show it to. So I said to this young lady, you want to come and see my house? Now, little did I know, at the same moment, she is calling her mother, saying, this is the address I'm going to. If anything happens, you know where I am.
Smart. Yes. Yes.
But- and we drive up and over the mountain into the valley where my house is. And we talk. We talk about a book at that time called Ordinary People, which became a movie. We talk about Huey Lewis and the news. And at that time, there was vinyl. You know, I had a rented record player in my apartment before I moved into the house. And when I got up the next morning, when she was gone, you know, because she had to leave late in the afternoon because she had a date.
Right.
The book and the record were on the front seat of my car.
Yeah, that's so good.
I still don't know how she got in my garage. But there I am. I now call her. It's busy. 10 minutes later, I call her. It's busy. I am so obsessive, I now call for the next 24 hours. It's busy. She's on this date that seems to go on an awfully long time. Finally, I get her. I ask her out. We go to the movies. I say, it's better if we sit in the back of the movie theater. She said, why? I said, I don't know how to explain it to you, but it's better if we move and sit closer to the back of the movie theater. She said, why? I said, okay. We sit in the middle of the movie theater. We're watching Walkabout. It's an Australian movie. The entire audience stands up and comes over to say hello. She looks at me and she goes, oh, a little late, Stacy.
Oh, it's so great. But then you go back to her house after a date, and there's a guy standing.
Oh, I go back to her house, and she's staying at her parents' house. They're traveling. She and her four-year-old son, he is sleeping. The glass door is open. The sliding glass door is open. Where this short scaredy cat gets the nerve to walk outside through the open sliding door. I don't know where I got that nerve. I look to my left. I look to my right. And there, crouched in the bushes, is a very handsome blonde person in his underwear. He says hello. I say hello. He scampers by me, goes into the sliding door. I follow him, and Stacy says, you have to leave now. I say, absolutely. Not you. Him.
Dude, I just ran away. I'd be like, I got to get out of here. I don't know what's happening. I got to go.
Yeah.
But you were, you fall in love hard. Like, you, it hit super hard. You could have any girl at that point, any girl in America.
Yes.
But you, there's that connection, that thing, that whatever kismet, pheromones, whatever chemistry it is, it's the way they smell. It's the way, everything about them.
And I want to tell you, she showered.
So before we get to this next, and I'm not going to take you through the whole book because we have limited time, I know, and it could take hours. I really love this book. But so, you know, I don't know if I told you this yet. When I was in Curacao to see my friend George the last time in September, and taking care of him.
Curacao, the island?
Yes. And that's, you know, I spent the summer there taking care of my friend George, the marine biologist who's had bacterial meningitis.
Yeah.
And so he's doing well. But I'm driving from his hospital back to his house to feed his dog and his truck. And it's this little desert island. And it's 10:30 at night. And there's a plastic bag in the street, and I stop, and I realize it's not a plastic bag. It's a dog. It's a puppy. It's a 5.5-pound, 7-week-old little dog laying there in the warmth on the asphalt, and it just looks at me, and I'm like, whoa. So I pick it up. I put it on my lap. I drive back to his house, and I'm like, I don't know what to do now. I give the dog water and food, and I'm like, I don't know. George is in a hospital. He can't take care of this dog. There's nobody to give this dog to. It's an island. There's no. So I post something up on social media real quick, just that I found this animal. And so Providence, whatever you want to call it, the lady who I'd been leaving money for years for, if I would go gambling, a degenerate gambler, whatever, I have money in my pocket. If I won, I would always leave it with this Curacao Animal Rescue Foundation. I didn't know the people. I just knew a volunteer I would leave it with. And she reached out to me and said, if you want that dog, I can tell you how to get it back to the United States. And there I was. So at 36 hours later, I've got a stamp from the health department and I'm on my way home. His name is Buddy. And he's one of the best things ever. I didn't realize the whole.
Wow. So he's still with you?
Yes. No, he's at my house right now. He sleeps with me every
night. Was it a mutt?
Yeah. He's just a feral island dog.
Wow. And must be so happy.
It is, listen, people say he hit the lottery. I didn't understand the hole that was inside of me after Barger, my dog. Like, I didn't know how big it was until I met him.
Yeah, yeah.
But to that point, I'm reading about Percy and Amanda, Stacy's terriers, when you fall in love with her.
Well, you know, but first, I didn't want a small dog. And these are not small dogs. These are like, you know, when you cut the tip off like a cucumber?
Sure, yeah.
That little piece that you're going to throw away, that's as big as the dog was.
Yeah. Oh, I know. My mom had him. And by the way, I had Irish setters growing up.
Irish setter. Iris setter. I had an Iris setter for a little while, and that dog would jump in the water with me in the lake when we lived in our house outside of New York, way above our means. And that dog would swim with me. And then my feral parents gave the dog away.
It broke my heart. My heart, Henry, to read that.
Yeah, said, oh, the dog would be much happier on a farm.
But it talks about, the hole in my heart lingered into my adulthood, and I knew no little dog could ever fill it, but of course the dog did, because they always do.
Yeah,
but
so Buddy filled you.
Yeah.
And with the marriage, when I married Stacy, came a little four-year-old fellow,
Jim,
who is now 53, and came to... little Yorkshire Terriers, the female, Amanda, who I resented, followed me everywhere. If I sat down in a chair, she sat down next to me. If I got up to get a glass of water, she followed me. She never left my side. I fell hard for this dog.
And that's what you're trying not to do. Ultimately, you're like, I'm not going to fall in love with you.
I didn't think I could.
Right? Right.
I didn't think I could. How do you fall in love? It's not even a dog. It's a duh.
Dude, it's a thing. And listen, one last one, because there's so much more to this book, guys. I cannot tell you how much I want you all to buy it. It's called Henry Winkler's It's Being Henry, available now. But the fact that you were the biggest star in television, and that's just not arguable in my mind. In these years, there was no cable. There was no internet. There was only four channels in anybody else's houses, in Kansas City, 4, 5, 9, and 41. And, you know, you are running into other stars, big celebrities, and McCartney and Jagger. I'm crying because I'm like, oh, I feel for
okay.
you on this.
Well, let me just say. So I'm walking down the street, Lexington Avenue, New York City, with Stacy. And all of a sudden, coming from the other direction, is Paul McCartney. And I went, oh. And he went, Buffons. And I said, I can't believe it. What a pleasure. A woman came out of a shop and gave us each a rose, a flower shop. Another woman came up and said, can I just stand here? He said, no, we're in the middle of a conversation. And then he gave me a number. He said, call, let's get together. And I, like an asshole, called. And like Stacy, I called. And then again, never did he pick up. The party you're calling is not picking up right now. You can leave a message. I never saw him again. That was 1976, 77.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's just so good. Just all of it. Just, I'm telling you, the book, I hope that you're as proud of it.
Do you think he listens to your show? Because I sure would like to see him again.
I bet. Well, really? I mean, but a beetle. Like a beetle. That's a...
A beetle. The most recent beetle I've met, someone as big as the Beatles, is a year ago.
Mr. Mahomes.
I met Patrick Mahomes.
Yes, yes. We have to talk about this.
And then, of course, I fell off the radar because... Taylor Swift now is in that box.
Well, and I feel like he's giving you the McCartney. You were invited to dinner. You invited him to dinner.
Him to dinner just before he ran off to play the game that he was going to win. He turned back. He said, I'm going to take you up on that dinner. I would just like to say that Patrick is a fibber.
Strong words.
An email. Now I know he's got other big things. He's got bigger fish to fry. But man, there is a chicken waiting for him. Stuffed with ricotta and spinach. Mm. Mm. and a reduction sauce, his eyes will water. Yeah, but Taylor Swift, you know, Kelce is, they've taken over the news.
She seems like a nice girl.
I guess so, but I look much better in the jersey.
Oh, I love you. I love you so much.
You know, and the thing is that there's a rumor she sings.
I've heard that. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Some say she's got a real shot at success.
Okay. Oh, you know what, Johnny? I just heard that Bono liked Barry.
Oh. You've got to go to
My
Vegas.
My life is made.
You have to go to Vegas and see him at the Sphere then.
Yeah, I've got to.
I mean, how fantastic would that be?
Yeah, then I have to get myself backstage.
No, by the way, there's so much more to this book, guys. I cannot tell you enough, because the thing I took away from this book, I took away a lot of them, but there's so many truths about just everyone's life. We all have to keep earning. We're all a little afraid that we don't want to give away. We all seek approval. We all, if we're smart, we keep trying to improve ourselves.
Yes, that is true. And this is the overall theme I realized in this book was I started, my younger life was being who I thought I should be. And my journey has been getting to becoming more authentic. Just being who I am and not trying to cock around, figuring out, you know, a persona.
Right. And doing what's in your heart. You are, and people have said this, I've said this, but I mean this. You're one of the nicest, most truly thoughtful and sincere humans I've met on the planet. If you worked at a grocery store.
Yeah, but I say the same about you. I say the same about Fancy Pants.
Yes, indeed, she is. And I'm
working. I mean, when we have been together, it is like we know each other. If we don't see each other for a long, long time, and we have dinner at one of the wonderful restaurants in Kansas City, it's like, oh, yeah, I saw you about, like, last week.
No, it always feels just picking up.
Yeah.
But it's not lost on me that there's two ways you could have ended up as a human, because you had such a the parents, and I don't mean to speak ill of your mother and father.
It's okay, I do.
So they were so terrible.
Let me tell you a story, John. Like, I'm 15 years old. I don't know if I put this in the book, because, you know, my mind, I don't remember what I wrote. But I'm 15 years old, and we take a trip to Boston, and I meet a girl, I don't know how, through the friends we were visiting, or the cousins, I forget who they were, and we go to a movie, and she drives, and I am head over heels. Holy mackerel, this is even before college, this is before Lula. Turlington Blackwell III. So I'm writing this woman a letter from my desk in New York City. And you know that cartoon that the guy is knee deep in crumpled paper because it's not the right thing.
Right.
He's made a mistake.
Right.
I, of course, am dyslexic. I can't spell. I am knee deep in paper. No, that's not right. Oh, I can't cross that word out. I've got to start again. It was so frustrating. I started so many times. Finally got it right. Put it in the mail. Put a stamp on it. Now I'm waiting for her to write back. I can't breathe. I'm just so in love with this young lady. Never hear from her. Okay, maybe she didn't get the letter. Don't know. Okay, maybe she doesn't like me. Okay, don't know. Write her another letter, knee-deep in paper. An entire forest has been cut down for me to write this letter.
Yeah.
Don't hear from her.
Ugh.
Now, cut to 20. I'm 20. And for some reason, I have to look through the top drawer of my father's bureau. And I'm going through it. Oh, I'm looking for this, that. No. Oh, what is this? All the two letters that lady wrote me, that girl wrote me from Boston, are in the top drawer of his bureau. He never gave them to me because he thought they would distract me from my studies.
Ugh.
Ugh. Those were my parents.
And because there's no pain like that first love awakening, that thing that you feel, whatever it is, because you've never been hurt by it, it's the strongest you'll ever feel.
Well, I didn't even know.
Right.
I thought, well, I guess she's not going to write me. And she wrote me. Ugh. I only found out about it 6 years later.
I want to know, did he open the letters? Did he read them? And then
I don't know. I don't know. I wrote letters to my parents, you know, hey, listen, when you get to college, write us, you know, write letters. So I wrote letters, and I got them back. My father corrected my letters, and in the margins put lines of how many mistakes were in that particular sentence.
How do you reconcile that, Henry?
You don't.
You can't.
You make a promise that you'll be a different parent.
That's my point, was you could have gone one of two ways. You could have continued the cycle, or you use that and you become something your family has never had. Truly, with real empathy and understanding and kindness and sincerity and thoughtfulness.
Well, you know, here's the great thing. One of the reasons that we're such good friends, the four of us, is because that is who you are. You are a walking, empathetic soul on the earth. That's not even nice words. That's just the truth.
I hope so. I want
to. Yeah, no. I mean, there was that one time, but, you know, I don't think about that.
We won't speak of it again.
No.
No, sir. You are one of a kind, and I.
Yeah, ditto. You are, too. I'm very happy that the two of you are my friends, and Jake, your producer, has always been amazing to me.
He loves you very much, and the world does. And I just can't wait to see what you do next. I can't wait to watch the next project, just everything, all of it, man. It's I love watching it.
I love
being on the side.
And I love talking to you.
Well, I've been looking forward to this book, and it didn't disappoint me in the slightest. It was more than I had hoped for, and I got to tell you, it's a great book for anybody.
See, I'm thinking great stocking stuffer.
It is. Yeah. It is. And I got to tell you, I opened the book that day from you, and you wrote a beautiful inscription on it, and it meant absolutely the world to me. I bet I've read it another 100 times.
You know what, Johnny? I have to admit that inscription was meant for somebody else, but I put it in the wrong envelope. And then I thought, oh, I'm too embarrassed to say send it back.
That's right. I love you. And
I love you.
I can't wait to see you.
Me too.
So, and love to Stacy and Max and Zoe, and I hope you guys have wonderful holidays.
Thank you.
Nothing but love, and you're surrounded by grandkids, and I just hope it's fantastic.
Thank you, and you know, love to you know who.
And I'll send you a picture of Buddy. You're gonna love him. He's
I can't wait to see Buddy.
He is something. I'm telling you, that there's such love that comes out of him.
Well, you know what? When you were telling the story, you said he looked at me. And then I just knew.
No, I knew. I knew. And I knew I'd have another dog someday, Henry, after Barger died. You know, he came to the studio with me every day for 16 years.
Yeah. But, you know, it takes a while to get over. You can't just replace the puppy that died.
No, never. No. And you never really replace. You're just another, another
soul. You just have another wonderful dog. I, as an adult, I have had dogs all the time. We have 2.5 dogs. We have our Labradoodle, our Golden Doodle, and then our son, Max, dropped off about 4 years ago his idiosyncratic three-legged German Shepherd who's on drugs.
Of course he does. That's great.
And let me just tell you, the grandchildren will not come in the house until they know for sure that dog is locked upstairs in a room.
Oh my God. Is he a maniac?
He's a maniac. Our dogs come into the house, and they will not come in the house until I explain to them that Hamlet is locked away upstairs in a room.
Oh, poor Hamlet.
But Stacy loves that dog like it is her son.
It's a
the dog,
good man.
Let's be frank, is a liability.
Oh. Listen, I will, man, I sure do appreciate you. We've been talking for an hour, and I know it's early there. And
I don't care. Well, I don't care. It is a pleasure.
It's always the best. I don't know if when there's a Comic-Con or a World of Wheels or anything, but I'll jump on a plane with Sassy Bomb Fancy Pants anytime. Next time you're in New York, you do some plays, anything. And just so we can spend a couple hours having some food.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing the two of you.
Soon. And best to Stacy.
And send the picture. Send the picture of Buddy.
I will.
Okay.
You wear your legend well.
Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday, everybody.
Merry Christmas, my friend. Stay right there.
Yeah.
Is he not the best?
There's no competition.
No, I'm telling you, there's so much more in that book. Again, it is a look inside a very famous person's life, but it's a lot more, man. And it's the same stuff we all face. And not everybody's parents, thankfully, were as hard as his parents were. But there's a lot to be learned from it about our constant seeking for approval from our fathers. Some are better than others, and it's not black and white, it's in grays, right? And not yours.
Mm.
Yours, yeah. That was very clear.
Well.
But the idea of how it all works with us, how all the choices we're going to make based on how we were treated as kids, and then just life and how you got to go through it. And the fact that we all look on the outside at a guy like Henry and we think since he was the Fonz, he's set.
Yeah. He just walked through life.
Everything's you're not set. You know, Stacy went through breast cancer. He had to raise children. The phone doesn't ring.
Mm.
You don't get the projects you want. You have your own ego to deal with. You know, when do I quit? Do I quit? No, you don't quit. You got to stay at the table because if you don't stay at the table, you'll never get the right cards. You'll never get the hand of a lifetime. And, you know, but Barry, that's what he finally got when he finally got his first Emmy, which seems crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when it happened.
Okay. I only have 37 seconds. I wrote this 43 years ago. Okay. Okay. Can I just say, Skip Brittenham said to me a long time ago, if you stay at the table long enough, the chips come to you. And tonight, I got to clear the table. If you get a chance to work with Bill Hader or Alec Berg, run, don't walk. Thank you for producing us, for creating us, for directing us, and for Bill for acting with us, and all of our wonderful writers, Sherry Thompson and a wonderful Sharon, Sherry Goldberg, an extraordinary publicist, Cliff and Aaron and Chris, who represent me almost for the first time. I feel represented. I can't stop yet. My wife, Stacy. Oh, my God, my cast and crew. And the kids, Jed, Zoe, and Max, you can go to bed now. Daddy won!